Lights of Democracy Now! Over 20 years. Go to our website at democracynow.org. That last voice, the late, great historian Howard Zinn. Special thanks to Mike Burke and all the team that makes Democracy Now! Happen over these decades. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We thank you.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Today is Friday, and it is the 19th of 2016 in the month of February. Happy you can be with us today. We're local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. And I'm joined in the studio by my co-host and WHFR News Director, John Conroy. Hey, John.
Yes. How are you today, Jay?
How is it out there?
It is fine.
I mean, driving in, there's no big storm. They somehow forecast a lot of winds, and it's a little windy, but it's not that windy. And they said, "Ooh, huge downfalls of rain," and we haven't gotten that. It's just been getting a little warmer, and that's good, I guess.
It's okay with me. It might change a little bit tonight. We might see some
interesting weather. Okay, you know. It's still technically winter, so what the heck. I want to do a correction on last week, because I kind of made fun of, I guess especially Catholics and other people, and we're talking about the fish fries, remember, John?
Yes,
both,
sir.
And you can plug those again later, but they go on Fridays, is that supposedly on Fridays you would not eat meat as a sign of your, I don't know, faithfulness to God or whatever, and just shows that you can do a little sacrifice once a week.
Right. Yep.
But as I said, everybody these days, vegetarians especially, know that fish is meat. And I looked this up. I accidentally found this. Is that in the Middle Ages, fish wasn't considered meat, but that wasn't the issue. The issue was the Catholic Church said that you can eat fish because they don't reproduce sexually, and therefore it's okay. That the dirty meat, I guess, is like cows that, you know, it takes two to tango.
Okay.
But that's not true. Fish, actually, there's male fish and female fish, and they do reproduce sexually. And so, but it was a common belief, not just by the church, but everybody in the Middle Ages, that fish were asexual. I don't know. They just all, every one of them, all of a sudden came up with eggs and just, boop, you know, laid them, and there you go. And I guess they just never observed a fish close up. They didn't have aquariums or something in the Middle Ages, that they watched fish for day and night. But it really was a matter, they didn't have any science approach to understanding the world around them, I guess. So that was it. It wasn't that fish wasn't meat, but it wasn't meat that was, you know, produced sexually. Could that would somehow taint it? But if the meat wasn't produced sexually, then you could eat it on Friday, which means you could eat the fish. So that's the crazy, and I never heard that before. And here, I'm a very old person, and I finally got the story straight, is that their belief was that fish was okay on Fridays because it wasn't, fish were not produced sexually.
And I'm Catholic, and I never heard that before as well.
So. You know, that's the story. And it still is a token, I guess. Most people, at least in the United States, still prefer to eat the big honkin' cheeseburgers, okay, or steaks or whatever. I mean, that's the meat of choice, I think you'd have to agree, here in the U.S. At least McDonald's and Burger King want you to believe that, you know. But certainly, so if those are the favored choices, then choosing fish would seem to be a little bit of a sacrifice. You choose fish on purpose, even though you may not like it. I know my daughter, it had nothing to do with religion. I think it's because she had an aquarium when she was young, maybe too young, and her fish died. And so she's never liked to eat fish in honor of the fish that died, I think. Or she may be listening today. They have a week off from school, some sort of teacher break week. So, Christy, I hope I'm getting this right. But she won't eat fish, basically, and it has nothing to do with anything symbolic or unsymbolic, except she had a bad experience with fish when she was young. So there you go.
Well, how about chicken or turkey?
Yeah, it doesn't bother her.
No harm, no foul.
Oh, geez. That's why we have volunteer staff. You know. If the puns get too bad,
we cut you.
Bye bye.
Yeah.
We need you, John.
Okay.
Because I have bad puns too. So.
Right.
All right. So that's the update on that. It wasn't that people didn't think it was meat, but they thought it was meat produced asexually. Oh my gosh! And that made it somehow cleaner or something.
If you've ever seen a salmon spawn, you wouldn't say they don't have contact with each other.
Okay, I'm thinking about this. Immaculate Conception.
Uh-huh.
Jesus was produced asexually, right?
There you go. That's more like it.
I mean, you know. So there's the fish Jesus connection, because he liked fish, right?
Fish and loaves. And
he reproduced fish.
And he brought in
magically
only a few fish at a time and made it into a big feast for everybody.
Right. You know? Yeah. So yeah. There, maybe that's, I'm just trying to figure out the iconography here. Okay. Let's go past that. What else is in the papers? All right. Well, again, we got to backtrack a little bit, because the stories that actually appeared in the papers the last couple of weeks were about the funding for the new Veterans Park that is moving the stones and some of the park equipment from the old City Hall to the new location. We're actually near the new location, as it turns out, not the Dearborn Administrative Center, but the Henry Ford Centennial Library. We didn't really get full information about the fact. We did mention that it was passed and that Tefelsky was the only one on the Dearborn City Council that opposed it. And by the way, David Bazzi was absent, so he didn't vote on it. But nonetheless, it was approved. So that's good to know. But I guessed, since we didn't have all the details then, how much would it cost to move these couple of big stones? Mm-hmm. Well, they're big and heavy. You need a crane. And you know, so I guessed $20,000 to $40,000.
Right.
But then we talked about park equipment and
labor.
And labor. Well, it turns out that the city itself had put aside $1 million for the creation of the new Veterans Park. Okay. But then, after getting more bids and that and looking at it closer, it seems like it's going to cost $300,000 more. So this last city council ruling had to approve the additional $300,000.
Mm-hmm.
So this is $1 million. I mean, I'm gasping here for breath. $1,300,000 to move and sort of redesign. They have to redesign it because they're putting it in place of the $100,000 fountain that was donated to the Centennial Library, but finally broke and would require too much cost to keep it going. So they're taking that out from the front of the library. And the plan is, and there's a sketch here, and I think it's in the... If it isn't the Times Herald, it's in the Press and Guide now, of what that new area, new development is going to look like. So they're going to have to take out the fountain, take out the motors, take out the water faucets or whatever, or maybe they'll save it for a drinking fountain in the new park. I don't know. And they are going to put a plaque up for the guy who passed away. His family donated $100,000 for the beautiful fountain.
Yep.
So he's going to have a little plaque there saying this was the former place of the fountain that I donated. Maybe they can put it up by the water fountain or something, the drinking fountain. They put up this plaque there. I'm being facetious, but I don't know where his plaque is going to go, but I think the city promised to put his name up there somewhere on this. But that's it, folks. That's $1,300,000. Would you have approved that? I mean, the full cost? I have to ask, and I know I'm being, against the grain here, what was wrong with keeping it at the art space area? Okay, I mean, okay, City Hall's not there anymore.
Right.
But it's still, a park area, sort of. Are they going to tear it all down and reconstruct everything themselves? Do they want to expand into that area? It's true that only the people that wanted to go to the art space galleries would see the veterans display, or people had to make a special trip. But I guess the city thought it was important that people going, in this case, to the library how many people go to the library these days, would be the ones to see the Veterans Park. And, of course, everybody passing by on Michigan Avenue. I mean, this is in front of the library, right across from the Ford World headquarters.
Right.
So this Veterans Park will be very noticeable to anybody just driving by, even if they don't stop.
Well, the other argument is that it used to be a very good ending point for the parades when they travel through Michigan Ave to the old City Hall and end up at the Veterans Place with caissons, et cetera, for veterans ceremonies.
They do end there in the future, because they usually start closer to Greenfield and Michigan Avenue,
right.
And then go east to where the old City Hall was. Where are they going
to
go? You know? Because if Art Space is going to redo the park areas, there won't be room enough to accommodate the crowd at the end of the parade.
No, that's
so
true.
It's going to change the whole concept.
Layout. Yeah.
What do I know? I'm thinking that maybe it would start at the new City Hall on Michigan Avenue and go west up to Ford Field.
Well, that'd be interesting.
Because Ford Field is a great place to have a picnic afterwards.
Yeah.
You know. But nobody asked me, and who knows whether or not that was on the agenda ever. But I'm sure they already have it planned, because that's coming up soon, isn't it? Again. Memorial Day?
Memorial Day, well.
End of May?
End of May.
Yeah. So that's they've got to have a plan already. And I don't even know if this will be completed by then. But 1,300,000. Okay. Anyway. How many water pipes will that replace in Dearborn? Okay.
Well, we'll have to talk to the folks who run the park at Ford Field and see if they know something we don't know. You know.
Right. I mean, we could go right to the mayor's office and ask, but that would be, don't want to bother him, you know. By the way, speaking of lead, I think I did. Let's get that lead out, right? No, let's get moving here. There's a little story in the Times Herald from Dearborn Times Herald from last Wednesday also about the fact that Wayne County now has a lead inquiries hotline. So you can call up this number and ask how your community is doing or how concerned you should be or what you should look out for in terms of maybe lead in your water, in your area. You know, every area would be different. Depends on the pipes in your city. Or you're part of Wayne County, in other words. And so the hotline number is 734-727-7237. Boy, a lot of sevens there. That'll be confusing. But you can probably find out, some of the way. It's the Wayne County Department of Health, Veterans, and Community Wellness. If you have the pencil handy, I'll give it to you again. Monday through Friday, 8 to 4:30. The number is 734-727-7237. So that's the lead inquiries hotline for Wayne County. And I did talk to Mayor O'Reilly last week at the wonderful award ceremony for the great artist and art supporters in the city of Dearborn. It's called the Mayor's Arts Award, so of course he was there. And asked him about lead. And of course he went on. He probably would have gone on longer, but then we had to get a picture taken or something. We have some of the purest water in Michigan right here in Dearborn. And then our general manager, Susan McGraw, who was at the event also, she turned to me after I talked to the mayor and said, well, where I live, Garden City, we've got the best. She's a Garden City booster. She grew up there. She still lives there. So she thinks everything is better in Garden City, but maybe it's true. So but the point is that certain communities could have bad water because their pipes are very old and they haven't replaced those water pipes recently. So they were lead pipes and they're starting to corrode, and that lead is leaching into the water. There's also another problem too. It's not just lead, but some contaminant. I know Ann Arbor has got this problem now. Ann Arbor, you think a rich community? There is a plume of some sort of toxic, poisonous chemical that is in their groundwater out there.
Right.
Which is coming into their system. I don't know. It's like moving from west of Ann Arbor, but it's underground, and it's very dangerous, and so they're taking steps to try to eliminate that. But my only point here is that there's more than just lead to be worried about in the water supplies.
Well, and it's also affected the University of Michigan. I know there was
in Ann Arbor,
a whole number of students that came down with some kind of virus that they're treating.
Okay, sure.
They've had to disinfect the rooms and the dormitories, and some other work has been done to correct that problem. You
know? As I've tried to say for years, and a lot of experts on cities, college professor types, you know, they're always lecturing people on stuff, always, you know. That we've got to put money constantly into the infrastructure. We've seen what happens without money repairing roads on a regular basis. Now we're about $2 billion behind in even getting up to the maintenance level. I mean, we've got some massive replacement to do in Michigan because we waited so long to even do the annual repairs. And the same thing is true with the pipes, but the pipes, both sewer and water lines, they're underground, so people normally don't see them or think about them. And politicians say, well, if people are not thinking about them, I don't have to do anything. They can use that money for something that will get me reelected, you know. I'm sure people in Dearborn Heights say, get rid of the rats. You know, I mean, they're, because you can see them. Okay, they're
visible.
I couldn't believe the story, and it was what I stated last week. One person said it got into, I guess, their garage. It was eating the wires in her car. Mm. Why would rats eat the electrical wires in the car? Must be pretty hungry.
Maybe they want to take it for a ride. They're trying to.
Was there oil on the wires or something that would have made it juicy? I don't know. I'm just saying, so the squeaky wheel gets the grease, but the point is we have to, and our elected politicians and the people who are in their appointed civic service offices, they need to constantly be concerned about the repair and the renewal of all the infrastructure and, you know, the stuff that keeps us alive. Clean water, clean air,
yep.
No backsliding, no exemptions. No abatement that are approved. Everybody has to be concerned only about making this environment cleaner and better for all of us than it is now. Why go halfway? Why say, well, we can accept a little bit of pollution? Really, we can't. We shouldn't. You know, I mean, we're talking about the health of human beings here. Is it, well, profits will go down on the big companies? Okay, let profits go down. Aren't they human beings too? We got to turn that around somehow, folks. And so anyway, that hotline number again in Wayne County, if you want to inquire about lead or maybe about some other contaminants, I don't know, you might be informed on that too, is 734-727-7237. But again, Mayor O'Reilly of Dearborn says that our water is almost the cleanest in the state of Michigan, primarily because, you know, we have this little project going. It's called the Combined Sewer Overflow Project, that we have to replace our sewer lines so that when they overflow, that sewage doesn't go into our drinking water supply. Okay? And so they have to put in bigger lines, basically, underground. There's other approaches, but Dearborn, we don't have the territory for the other cheaper approaches. So how much has this been costing us? And it started about 10 years ago, going about probably about another 20 years. Oh, about $350 million. And Mayor Guido, when he was in office, he spoke off the record, and he said, as soon as people figure out how much it's going to cost us, I'll be voted out of office. Well, he died before that happened. Luckily, the city pretty much kept it all quiet, and they spread out the cost over a lot of years. Mayor O'Reilly's idea was, as long as we're spending so much money on this, and it's got to be underground, why don't we fix, at the same time, when we dig down there, fix the water lines and the sewer lines together with bigger pipes? So we're improving the infrastructure for just a few pennies, a couple million more. But as long as we're doing $300 million plus,
right,
then a few, and he said, we've got half of the water lines in Dearborn are brand new in the last 5 or 10 years at most. And so, you know, that's this project, but they redirect, as long as we're going to pay so much, then why just worry about the sewer overflow? Dig down there, and as long as you're digging, change the water lines too and upgrade them. So that's one of the reasons Dearborn's water is so good right now, is because we've already replaced, and we're still working on it to replace more. We've already replaced half of the water lines with new pipes.
Well, you've got it open for one thing, and might as well do the next.
But the cost
will be so much more down the road.
The cost on the water bills I can't remember the numbers, but it's hundreds and hundreds of dollars more quarterly than what I used to be paying, just because of this project. And you know, my house is a little bit bigger than average, but not that much bigger. And so, but people seem to just go along with paying for it. And what was it we heard, John?
For the price of good health. I mean,
in Flint, though, the Detroit water that we pay for cost people in Flint four times as much.
Yeah, yep.
Now, that's not just because there was a switchover and switched back, because they were going to have to pay more money anyway years ago.
Three times the value, yeah.
But is it the pumping it all the way up to Flint? Is that the – I don't understand that. But it's sort of like paying for auto insurance in Detroit. It costs 10 times as much to insure your car in Detroit and East Dearborn, where I live, than like my daughter who lives in Allen Park. Mm-hmm. So what's that?
Risk factors, apparently.
Oh, no. It's not just risk factor.
That's, I'm sure there's more, but
don't give me that. No.
That's the line.
The police chief lives in my neighborhood, and okay. I keep my car locked up in a garage, and, you know, come on. And I've got an alarm system on my car. Come on. That's no, it's redlining. It's that nasty practice that nobody wants to admit they do. But, you know, the big companies say that's the only way that they can it's a, you know, well, they talk about the risk and they talk about poor people, you know, never know what poor people are going to do. I mean, they don't even know how to drive cars. Like, I don't know what they're thinking, you know, but all I can think is some sort of very negative things about poor people, you know, that live in Detroit. And even the police chief of Detroit has sounded off that when he moved from Cleveland, his rates went up three or four times to what he was playing. And Cleveland isn't known as a crime-free city. So, although their downtown has improved a lot in the last couple of years, but last decade or so. Okay, moving on. All this stuff interconnects. Jack Lessenberry may not get to it the way we're going now, but Jack Lessenberry in the Metro Times this week, and highly recommend the Metro Times to you because it's free. So it's not a commercial. Just you have to figure out a place that you can physically pick it up. But you can go online if you've got a computer, metrotimes.com, and read it all there. They actually have the best investigative reporting every week, 6 to 8, sometimes 10 articles. They have the latest updates on Flint and what's going on in the Detroit City Council and who's corrupt and who really, they do a great job. And they have opinion pieces too, of course, and Lessenberry is one of them. And he talks about the problem with, and it's probably been reported on the news recently too, about how this person, I don't want to call him a gentleman, in Flint, in Southfield that owns some property for his business, and I won't go into details here, but he's going to allow people to dig for oil on it. Pardon the fact that that it could contaminate, if something goes wrong, all the groundwater supply in Southfield, and some people use groundwater, I guess, rather than Detroit water up there. And, of course, there's some streams and there's some other places where kids play in the water that's on the surface, too, in Southfield, and that might get contaminated. So for the sake of profit, he's doing that. And because, okay, I meant mention it. He runs a church, okay? It's, can I say non-denominational? It seems to be, although, I guess I better dig that up. But it's a church. And he controls the property, and so the city can't say anything to him about the sale. But the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality can, and you all know about the MDEQ. They're the ones that approved the Flint water supply switching to the Flint River and without proper chemicals added. So the MDEQ doesn't have the best record recently of protecting our environment, and so it's up to them to approve his drilling for oil. Not his, but he's got a company that'll pay him a bundle to drill for oil there. So that's a disaster waiting to happen. And both the mayor of Southfield and Lessenberry and so on, they all are very strongly against allowing that to happen. But the city doesn't have many options to stop it. It's all up to the MDEQ. Maybe they'll do something to change their reputation. What is the other one downriver here? It's the pollution coming into the air from, there's a plant, is it Melvindale? It's a refinery, is it, that wants to get...
Marathon Refinery.
Marathon, yep. The oil people. Yep. They want permission to do something about the pollution they're putting in the air. They want to change it or
increase emissions. Yep.
Basically, yep. Yeah. But I think there's some bits and increase some kinds of emissions, right, but not others. I don't know. But guess who gets to approve that finally? MDEQ.
Yep.
Yeah. Not the people of that area who have been suffering with bad air for, like about 80 years. But
the idea is they want to increase non-lethal emissions, and other emissions are okay, according to them.
Yeah, well, I think the test is one that they tried to use on some of the people approving the Flint water. They said, okay, if you think it's so good, here, drink it right now in this meeting. No thanks. But it's totally safe.
Yeah.
No, I'm not thirsty. Come on. We're going to come up there and pour it down your throat if you think it's so good. And I think they should put masks on these guys from Marathon and let them breathe that new pollution level a couple months. And then let their family be masked, too, and breathe that in their houses and see if they'd like to go through that.
Enjoy that, yeah.
If they think it's so safe. You know, and I bet they, I don't want to do that. Well, duh. Okay, it's not that safe.
Another case of not in my backyard.
Right? Yeah, of course. Even if they think it's safe, it's not all that safe, really. Okay. So we're continuing here on the new WHFR Journal, making waves, causing a little trouble, of course, and the way things go on anywhere else. And we're doing it to cause you to think and do your research, not to believe what we say, not to act in a way that's in accord with what we've suggested. Although that's fine, but we want you to find other sources and talk to your friends and neighbors and work out the issue for yourself and then take action. These are things that I think matter, or we wouldn't be talking about them. But of course, all the opinions on this show,
all our views are strictly our views and not necessarily the views of Henry Ford College or WHFR.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There you go. Okay, I'm looking at the press and guide from last Sunday to see if we missed anything. I don't think so. They claimed that the additional amount was not $300,000 but $400,000 going to the park. And get this though, economic director Murray. What's his first name? They've got to have it in there. Barry Murray, of course. Hi, Barry. He's Director of Economic and Community Development here in Dearborn. They actually have a grand plan for the development of that area in front of the library. And the initial vision has a price tag of $2.7 million of everything they want to do there to make it beautiful. And they think people wouldn't go for that, so they're trying to keep it to the $1 million up front, and now of course just for the Veterans Park, and now that's bumped up another $400,000. So there you go. Okay. About the rats in Dearborn Heights that we already mentioned, there are some quotes in the story that goes a little more in depth than the one we saw last week. Ordnance Department Director Jack McIntyre there in Dearborn Heights says, of course, he's 100% committed to getting rid of the rats. He's committed. The rats are not so committed, I guess, to leaving. And he says, with all due respect, we do have vector control. Remember that was the magic buzzword?
Vector control, yes.
That Lisa Hicks Clayton, a councilwoman, said we need to bring in somebody to do outside vector control. Exterminators, I guess that is, somehow. Although vector control almost means you find a way to move the rats to somebody else's backyard.
Right,
you know,
right.
I mean, it almost seems like push them out with a shovel or something and see how they do across the street. But anyway, he says they do vector control every single day. But of course, they do tell people, of course, tips. You know, if you find rodents in the area, rats in the area, then you've got to get rid of your trash. Keep your trash cans lifted off the ground so the rats can't get to them. I keep my trash cans in my garage, which is closed, but again, rats can get into garages too, even with the garage doors down. You know, they can,
yep.
I was going to say squirrel their way in, but that's a different animal, isn't it? Of course, let the city know if you see these things going on. But residents need it. McIntyre says, please call our office. Again, that's the Ordnance Department at Dearborn Heights, excuse me, City of Dearborn Heights. And remember, they're only got a 4-day work week out there, so don't call on Fridays. Well, maybe you can leave a message. But he says, according to his calls and complaints to the city, the rat problem has been declining. So he doesn't see the need to bring in an outside source. Well, it's just been, it's been declining for those people that don't have the problem. But for those that have the problem, I guess they, they're getting pretty mad. So there's a lot of things you can do to prevent that issue. They do also talk about maybe there's one or two people in the neighborhood that are not cleaning up their yards, that are not keeping their trash out of the way, and that's accommodating rats, and rats just won't stay in that yard. They'll go next door and down the block and so on. And so how do you get a certain person, a certain household to clean it up? And there are rules about that, and the city should enforce some of those, and I think they're going to do everything they can there. Again, historically, and I've lived in Dearborn since, oh my God, 1979, I know that Dearborn Heights has always had, every couple of years, stories about their large rat population. But Dearborn has some problems with it too. But for some reason, maybe it's the, because they have that, what do they call it, watershed area? I mean, don't they have tributary of the Rouge River running through lot of Dearborn Heights?
Sure do.
I think that's what accommodates the rats. It gives them a water supply.
The pipes.
Maybe the pipes are placed to breed along the banks. I don't know, but there's just some differences that automatically make it more a rat home than any other place. Okay, what else we got here? John, I know you've got a bunch of stories.
Culverts and rocky areas.
Oh, I love that word, culvert.
Yes, for rats.
Culverts.
I just wanted to talk for a minute about our 5101 restaurant. We are in the midst of weekly specials now at the 5101 restaurant, as well as this past week there was a seafood buffet on February 17th, and it was cuisine of the Deep South all week this past week, and next week we'll be going to Country French. And as Jay and I have both experienced, we've gotten fantastic meals there. You know, the value for those buffets is pretty amazing. And some of the folks from who've worked at the buffets have also worked here at the radio station. And so I want to just...
So what are the hours? And it's lunches Monday through Thursday.
Yep. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday lunches.
Oh, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Right. Yep. From 11:30 to 1. Mm-hmm. And Wednesday and Thursday dinners from 6 to 7:45. Mm-hmm. And reservations not required, but they are appreciated. And to call 313-206-5101. And the address is pretty easy, 5101 Evergreen Road.
That's right, main campus, Henry Ford College, just on Evergreen Road, just south of Ford Road.
That's right.
Yes. Yep. Okay. Well, there's a lot of excitement in Dearborn because we had our first presidential candidate, Republican or Democrat, who actually came to town here. We know that several people have appeared up in Flint, Michigan. Today there's a big protest rally that the Reverend Jesse Jackson is actually leading. It started at 11 o'clock this morning. They were hoping for a lot of people to show up there and even to come from all over the place. But Bernie Sanders is the one that got first to Dearborn, okay? And here's a story from the Dearborn Press and Guide. Hundreds of residents were cheering, chanting, and feeling the burn. That's one of his catchphrases since his first name is Bernie. Feeling the burn Monday night in Dearborn at the United Auto Workers invitation-only rally for Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders. The presidential hopeful drove home key messages for overworked Michiganders looking for relief from debt and economic suppression, delivering a message of hope rooted in Michigan's manufacturing powers. He said, a quote from Sanders, who they have to mention is 74 years old. They don't always mention the age of people, but in this case, oh, he's so old, we got to mention that he's 74. Okay, well, I'm 70, so there. Yeah. And I'm still talking.
You're still doing
and
well.
Walking.
Yes.
So give me a break. Give us a break. If I have 70-year-old listeners out there, let's all stand up for being 70, if we can stand, of course. But corporate America, Sanders said, is going to invest in this country, not just China. But that's only if there's a revolution where no one working 40 hours a week lives in poverty and works two, sometimes three jobs to obtain decent health care and retirement benefits. He said, again, Bernie Sanders, Senator Bernie Sanders from the state of Vermont, Americans sometimes forget that what we owe to the UAW and the struggles of American workers, he said. He spoke of the importance of the trade union movement, quote, reaching new grounds. breaking down barriers and uplifting not only union members, but all workers in the country. And wanted to bring your attention, especially if you're either reading the Downriver News Herald or if you go to newsherald.com, opinion piece this week by... Where is it?
Today? Craig Foran.
Craig Foran, of course. He mentions unions and his recollections. I think last week I mentioned that my dad was a member of the UAW, worked at Chrysler Corporation factories in Detroit for more than 40 years, for all of his life, in fact. And I thank the world for the UAW during that period because our family wouldn't have had hardly anything, income, health care, anything without the efforts of the union. And this was in the early days, okay, the 50s and 60s, where those benefits were not forthcoming from the manufacturing powers. Okay, here's what Craig said, and I'll just feature, well, I'll read fast. He says, hello, Downriver. And now, of course, he can be heard a lot further thanks to WHFR signal. Anyway, he says, I apparently hit a nerve with my column last week on both sides of the labor union issue. On the side that thinks labor unions are necessary and threaten, my column, as one person wrote, quote, deftly combines the historical context to current events, unquote. And those who think unions have damaged our economy, the social fabric and way of life, well, they were the ones who supported, passed, and signed into law Right to Work, which is nothing of the kind. There is a place in the middle, however, that's seldom explored, even though it's the most important aspect of the labor movement and its biggest failure. You see, if this one thing existed, our economy would look completely different. If it existed, hundreds of thousands of jobs would never have left the United States for greener, read cheap labor, pastures in the Far East and south of the border, read Mexico. What is it? Organized labor, of course. Think about it for just a minute. If effective labor unions existed around the world, and not just in first world nations, the U.S., Canada, Great Britain, France, and so forth, there would be little motivation for corporate America to move jobs out of our country. You see, the workers in these places, including Mexico, are making an awful lot less per hour. And you say, well, but their cost of living is less. Not that much less. So they're working at extremely exploited low wages. They're being extremely exploited with low wages in these other countries. Now, the argument was, when they first approved NAFTA, which presidential candidate Perot, what was his first name?
H. Ross Perot.
H. Ross Perot. Yeah. So he said, we're going to hear a huge sucking sound after it was approved. That is, all the jobs, whoosh, are going to leave America and go to Mexico. And Bill Clinton, who... he was all in favor of it. He said, yeah, but as soon as they get a lot of jobs down there, then their wages will go up just automatically. Well, duh, it's the large corporate manufacturers that have these plants. They're not going to raise wages unless they're pressured into doing it by the workers themselves, and they have to be organized. So we're talking about the workers themselves through unions. It's the only way that's going to happen. And in the history of the labor movement, I just asked people to do a little reading, starting back in the middle of the 19th century, the only way that you can confront the big, powerful owners of all the jobs is with labor unions. Otherwise, you get the scraps from the table. And I'm exaggerating here, I know that, but you get whatever they want to give you. And sure, they might want to give you a little more to keep you happy temporarily, but they're not going to do it out of humane reasons. They're going to do it as a bottom line thing.
And it won't respond to an individual.
No.
It will respond to a united front.
Right, especially if they threaten strike.
Yep.
Yes,
yep.
Which my dad had to do with the UAW many times, like a dozen or more times from his start with them in the 30s through the 60s. Mm-hmm. And that just showed, you know, we need that kind of solidarity, people to stand up. And I think Bernie Sanders, just as a candidate, we just read his quote about the labor unions and at the UAW headquarters where he gave the speech. He better say something positive about labor unions there, huh? Of course, yeah, it's that solidarity that if he gets elected, he's going to need to pass any sort of bills. As I said on my show, that he said, well, there's still Republican majorities in all these legislatures, so he won't get anything done. Well, does that mean if we elect a Republican president, we're going to get something better? No, of course not. No, it's not going to happen that way either, because they'll just continue what the majority of the legislature lets them do. But Bernie again, I point out when national attention got to Flint and our governor finally said we need an extra almost $30 million immediately to help out Flint, our legislature in Lansing, which is just as gridlocked Democrat-Republican as the one in Washington, D.C. is, they unanimously passed it. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the majority of the Republicans, who, $30 million, tell us where we're going to get it from. But they didn't even say that. They just passed it. Why? Because the eyes of the whole country were on them. And that's what it takes. It takes that kind of solidarity and awareness nationally to the issues that need to be done in order for anything to actually happen. And that pressure on elected representatives, whether Democrat or Republican, they will vote the way that this massive population wants them to, even if it's against their own personal beliefs, once that attention gets to them, gets on them. And that's Bernie's hope, I think. That's the way he would explain it. Usually he doesn't try to explain it, because in a soundbite of 15 seconds, you can't get that out, but I've got an hour-long show, see? Anyway, so Craig Friend is trying to say that, too. He says, companies would be hard-pressed to find cheap, nearly slave labor elsewhere. Instead, they'd have to pay a fair wage no matter where they produce their goods if there were unions, labor unions, for every large employment group around the world. Okay, before I go on, says Craig, I know the argument that pops up at this point. If companies have to pay higher wages, they'll pass those increased costs on to the consumer, driving up prices. Except that those consumers who are workers themselves now have more money too. But doesn't that mean inflation is inevitable? Not necessarily. But it does mean a return to a more sensible, realistic capitalism, a system in which, first above all else, there is a level playing field. And that always sounds good. And I mentioned, even in terms of minimum wage, Henry Ford the first was famous for introducing this $5 an hour wage to his workers back in the 1920s. And why did he do that? I mean, he didn't have to. It wasn't a union in those days organizing for that. He did it so that they'd be making enough money every week to buy a Ford for themselves, which only helps the middle class, right? I mean, it's good for the economy that more people have more money. And in his case, he said, they're working at Ford. They have enough money. They see how good the cars are, or hopefully, and they'll buy one for themselves. If they can afford it, they can't afford it, they can't do it. So that's the same. That's not trickle down. That's just a direct purchase. If you give like a minimum wage of $15, even for people working in McDonald's, well, I hope they don't go and buy more McDonald's hamburgers, but they'll have a better life, you know. They can spend it on health care, since there's no other way to cover that. They'll spend it on buying better food to take in their houses, and I bet they'll be more reliable. Maybe they can afford a car or public transportation even to get to their job. So the minimum wage helps even people in these lowest-level jobs. If it was higher, it would be money immediately going back into our economy.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to save it. They got plenty of debts, first of all, right? But they've got basic things they need. Anyway, that's how I see it, and I agree with Greg Foran on this one, especially about the connection, and Bernie Sanders, I have to admit, about unions. I've seen it myself, being a kid, being raised in an auto workers union family, and John, of course, worked. You weren't yep. part of the UAW. You were an administrator.
No, but I was a salaried supervisor of the frontline hourly folks, and mm-hmm. I know we wouldn't have anywhere near the same vacation benefits, health benefits, salary increases, except the union had already established that for many years.
The workers fought for it, and then John got the benefits.
I got some of the benefits.
It looks bad for your administration people, the managers, the supervisors,
right,
to have less than the workers. So they and there's fewer of you.
Yeah.
That manager and supervisor, so it didn't cost them that much more to include you in the benefits that were already won for the employees. But it would certainly make them look bad if, and you would feel very upset too, if you were making less money than the people you supervised.
Sure.
Right.
Well, it was certainly, we wanted to, we supported each other. I mean, right. You were I was very dependent on my folks doing their jobs to the best of their ability.
Right.
And so to keep them.
You got your quotas.
One
right?
beget the other.
Whatever.
Yeah, mm-hmm. One kind of beget the other. And when you think of Henry Ford with the cars, yeah, he made cars affordable because that way he could keep on building more and more cars and give people more and more jobs. You know?
Yep. Here's an important upcoming announcement for a show coming up in the next hour. Obviously, it's Highway 61 Blues, but a special show today. So let's just listen to this pre-recorded spot coming directly from Kitty Love herself, and we'll be right back with more of the new WHFR Journal.
Kitty Love here to let you know about a very cool show with live guests in the studio. Friday 2 till 4, February 19th, Sid Detroit and the Band with special guest Chris Canis on bass, Joseph Veloz, drummer Greg Giordano, Mark Watson on keys. Highway 61, 2 p.m. till 4, Friday the 19th, WHFR.FM 89.3, the station making waves.
Oh, that's so exciting. Don't you love her voice?
Oh,
she gets really close to the microphone.
She's got a great voice.
Yeah. That's not a real name, by the way, but that's the name on the air, and that's all you need to know. Okay.
But she does have a very sexy voice.
And the band is setting up already, just like, it almost feels like Thursday afternoon, Motor Live Drive, because our Studio J, which is right across from us here, and Studio A, we can see them through the big soundproof window, and they're at least three musicians, and of course our tech person Alan Contino was there helping with the getting the microphones and that set up, and that'll be coming up probably in the second hour of Highway 61. Again, that show Kitty Love has kept the name of Joanne Korczynska's show, but it's only 2 hours long. However, Mike Holloway is coming in from 4 to 6 with his Go With The Flow, Mike Holloway Blues Show, so it'll be big time blues for 4 hours, but we think between 3 and 4, the second hour of the Highway 61 show, there'll be a great live performance and interview with this local Detroit area band. Okay. Boy, we've got a couple other things here, John. I know we do. I'm reaching way over here.
Oh, lots of stuff, Jay.
Okay. Let's see here. Crestwood School District. Out there. They've decided now is the time to ask voters to consider a $35 million bond issue. And it's going to be on a May 3rd ballot. So it's another one of those not normal time school elections, which will cost that district a lot of money, okay, because that's the only thing happening. I thought the state of Michigan, and, you know, I think it was a Republican issue for a number of reasons, but I thought they said that school districts can't do elections whenever they want to, that it have to be part of the November election, but I guess not. I'll have to look into that. But anyway, what did they want the $35 million for? Well, it's been more than 50 years since voters approved a bond out there in the Crestwood area. I didn't know that. Huh. The last time voters gave the okay in a bond proposal was when the high school was built in the 1960s. See, there's a difference between a millage and a bond issue. Yep. A bond is extra big chunk of cash. You have a separate. So I'm sure that they voted on millages. I certainly recollect some millage being approved out there. But it says it's been nearly 10 years since the district went to the voters with any kind of proposal. Was that the millage or was that the other bond? Anyway, voters have rejected several different options on three different ballots in 2007 and 2008. So the district is home to five buildings. And they say there have been sinking funds here and there.
Again, the other difference, there's another difference between Al Scrocky.
Okay, we got people looking into our window across from the cafe. That's the window on the other side of our studio.
He's a criminal justice instructor.
Uh-oh, got to be good to him.
Yeah. Okay. He's also with Pix and Bow, the group that is playing tonight for our fish fry at Sacred Heart.
I knew you would get that fish fry in.
Yeah, you bet.
Sacred Heart and Grosse Ile.
That's right. Okay. No, but I also wanted to say about bonds and versus millage. Millage is an immediate infusion, where bonds you're taking more over time, mm-hmm. and it sounds like a lot of money, but it's spread more out in the scheme of things.
If you say so.
Yeah.
And this is just basic repair stuff too, although a lot of people say, why don't you do the basic repairs out of the general fund? Well, they don't have enough money. Most districts will say, we'd love to take annual repairs out, but we just can't. And also some repairs, like in this case, some of that $25 million is going to replace roofs on buildings. And that's only like once every, 30, 40, 50 years, if it's well built, that they have to be replaced. As most people know about their houses and the roof on their houses. Also, inefficient windows, windows that either leak or broken, or they're not double pane, you know, doesn't have any insulation on them. Security systems, upgrading the plumbing, mechanical and heating and cooling systems. Reconfiguring the pickup and drop-off areas in front of the schools to make it safer, you know, for kids to get to the cars, and resurfacing the parking lots, which always need it. Upgrading the cafeteria and kitchens. Yeah, there's higher standards now required for, yes. I know our cafeteria was upgraded a couple of years ago to the new higher standards here, and it's just required now. So a lot of these things seem like things that have to be done anyway, so there's no good argument for not voting in favor of this bond, folks, out there in Crestwood. Because how else are you going to do the repairs? That the basic budget doesn't have enough money in it for that. And most school districts say that, and they usually have to pass a bond for these major repairs that come maybe only once every couple decades.
Yep.
But I'm just saying that's a lot of money. Part of it, $4 million out of the $35 million will be used to upgrade technology, you know, computer stuff and wires and Wi-Fi. And about $5.5 million also will be used for property enhancements.
Property.
Trees, grass, and about $500,000 will go towards replacing obsolete equipment of some sort. They don't say what that is. Mm-hmm. But so that's coming up May 3rd. I'm sure there'll be mailings about that and the details of that going out to people of Crestwood District out there. And basically, that's the Dearborn Heights area. But it's confusing because Dearborn Heights has something like five different school districts, which I don't understand why they do, because it's a smaller city than Dearborn. But nonetheless, Crestwood is one of them. And it looks like there's a big decision to make there. Okay. This just came off something called The Voice. I just discovered local source of news, voicenews.com. So there's one to put down in your book, folks, when next time you're looking for information. Voicenews.com. Governor Snyder's, this is just from yesterday, Governor Snyder's budget takes the first step towards privatizing community mental health. I try to tell people that it's not so much the state of the state address. It's actually the budget request that come a couple weeks later from the governor, because there you see what he's really trying to make happen and how serious he is in terms of dollars about achieving those goals. Okay? And I don't remember any big stories about his budget, but of course, he apologized for Flint, he apologized for Detroit, and that was about it, Detroit Public Schools, in his State of the State address this year. Okay, but as it turns out, 45 words out of the 408 pages sent shockwaves through the community mental health system that we have now. In a nutshell, says the article, Snyder is proposing to privatize the administration of Medicaid funds for mental health and substance abuse services in the state. And a person on a St. Clair County Community Mental Health Board, he says this will have a devastating impact on the people we serve. Okay, that they just won't get the help they need if private companies are going to control how the money is spent. And I only have to point out the numerous privatization contracts that are serving our prisons in Michigan. In fact, yes, there are some private prisons in Michigan, but I won't get to that. Remember the big scandal? Do you remember, folks, at all? I think it was last year that the people were providing food to Jackson Prison. Mm-hmm. It was all full of maggots. It was rotten. Mm-hmm. And it took months and months for there to be any notice and any improvement. And yet, the governor sort of just soft-pedaled it and got that other company out of there without any harm, no foul, whatever.
Went to a different vendor. Yep.
Yeah, but again, it was all a sort of a sweetheart deal at the beginning where they were making huge profits out of providing bad food. So I don't trust any, I'm sorry, I guess I'm soapboxing again, any private company unless they're well-regulated. I mean, okay, I'm okay with charter schools, but give them the same standards and oversight and regulation, accountability of public schools, and they don't have that in Michigan right now. In fact, there's a bill up in the legislature in Lansing that probably won't pass that would demand it, though. Mm-hmm. That equal, talk about equal playing field.
Right, right.
Charter schools can't be in existence, and they can be private, but they've got to meet the same accountability standards, the same reporting standards as everybody else. Of course, one of the reasons charter schools can do it a little cheaper and why businesses want to get into it, because they don't have to have unions. They're not going to allow unions. So they can pay a starvation wage to the teachers, because a lot of teachers just can't get a job anywhere else. And anyway, there you go. And rather than teach in Detroit public schools, where they've got all kinds of building and maintenance problems with rats and mold and mushrooms growing in the floors, I mean, you know, horrendous conditions and situations there. You know, so they might go to a charter school. Or if they don't have enough years of experience to qualify for a big public system, they go to a charter school to start out for a few years. But they usually get starvation wages. And that's because the private company wants to make a profit. And they don't have to be accountable. They don't have to be. And the, even the governor can't do anything to them if they don't accomplish what they want to accomplish. And a majority of charter schools, according to the last things I've read in Michigan, are not accomplishing goals equal to the average public school. A few are doing fantastic, but so are a few public schools. I think Crestwood, in fact, is one of those that's doing really well, by the way. So maybe they should get a roof on their heads that's new. Okay. So I'm just saying, folks, the news media often, they focus on, you know, Snyder behind the podium apologizing for Flint, but the actual, what is he going to do about what? It's in his budget, and it's 408 pages long, so who's going to read that? But this situation, privatized community mental health, that would be disastrous. I think, too. And there's quote after quote of people involved in the system. Of course, they're worried about their jobs, but they're really worried about, I think, the care that needs to be given. And you can't trust those private companies unless they're very, very well regulated by government. And that's something that Republican administrations don't believe in. They don't believe in regulating the private sector. Because if the private sector didn't have any regulations, they'd do a fantastic job for everybody. Right? No, that's never been proven. That's never been the case. Take away regulations and everything would be hunky-dory, safe and well-managed. No, that just not going to happen. And besides, if you hire somebody to cut your lawn, let's say, landscaper to come in every couple of weeks or be a plumber, you know, if they do a bad job, you don't pay them. I mean, it's pretty direct, you know, when you complain to the bosses, and there's various regulatory agencies in the state, like plumbing associations, or I don't know, is there a landscapers licensing bureau, whatever, but there's ways you can go. Better Business Bureau, you can complain. There's ways, but there's nothing they can do about charter schools that are underperforming, and for almost a year, there was nothing it could do about the bad food for our prisoners in Jackson. And don't tell me, oh, they're criminals, they don't deserve good food. And you need to eat a plate of maggoty food yourself. That's how nasty I feel about that issue. You know, it's just not right. So I hope somebody, and I don't have the time to read 408 pages, but God bless whoever that source is, voicenews.com, for looking into that and pointing that out. Okay, John?
Yep. Jay, the Dearborn Symphony invites you to an intimate concert featuring Anthony Bonamici. Experience some of the most beautiful and technically difficult works ever composed for piano. This is sponsored by the Dearborn Symphony, and this performance is on Sunday, this Sunday, February 21st at 3 p.m. at the Cherry Hill Presbyterian Church, located at 24110 Cherry Hill, just west of Telegraph, on the north side of Cherry Hill. And if to order tickets, call 313-565-2424. Online at Online Tickets.
And he's a great Russian pianist.
Should be a really good show.
Yep. And I wanted to get a couple other things in here. John, we have only about 3 minutes left, and Kitty Love is very excited getting her show set up here and going back and forth. One little story from a couple of weeks ago, I just thought it was curious. Remember the Hyatt Regency Hotel that used to be here in Dearborn? That was what they first called it about 40 years ago in the Fairlane Town Center area there. The last name we kind of started remembering, and they did get a sign up a couple months ago. It was called the Royal Dearborn Hotel and Convention Center. Well, it's going to have a name change again because it's been sold again. That's right, it's been sold again, and about $30-40 million. But the point is, the name is now going to be Edward Village, Michigan. That doesn't sound like a hotel to me. Edward Village, Michigan? So I don't know anything about that or where else they have a village. I mean, almost Edward Village, Michigan sounds like they're going to sell the individual rooms for residents, residential use. I don't know. Senior? I mean, it's got 772 rooms. It's the second largest hotel in the state, and they can't seem to keep an owner who can make any money on it, because they got to keep cleaning those rooms, even if nobody's in them, I guess. And 63,000 square feet of banquet space.
Wow.
And most people's homes are lucky to be 1,000, 1,500 square feet. Some people have 2,000 square foot homes. But this is 63,000 square feet, not for the hotel rooms, but for the banquet space connected to those 772 rooms. So there's no information from this story from 2 weeks ago that was in the Times Herald about who or what this company is, the Edward Village, Michigan, but that's the new owner. And, it doesn't say here that they're going to rename it Edward Village, Michigan, but that's the name of the new owner. Oh, my gosh. Mm. Okay, and a commendation to one of our WHFR heroes of last year, and still a hero, up in the Flint water crisis, the Iraqi immigrant, is Dr. Mona Hanna Atisha, hyphenated last name. She's director of pediatrics at Hurley Medical Center in Flint, and she was the major science whistleblower to point out the toxic levels in Flint's water supply of lead, and she still continues as a tireless advocate for the children of Flint throughout the crisis. And she's been on all the national media, even the BBC internationally, speaking about the problem and what we can do. And she's now going to be honored by Access in Dearborn. And that's going to be at their big annual fundraiser, their annual dinner, April 23rd. She actually, the award they call it, and, you know, they give everybody award if they speak at the, you know, if you're going to make a speech, you know, you got to give them award. No, she deserves this. The award is actually called the Champion of Justice Award. So
very good.
couldn't go to a better person, especially in the last year, and someone who has connections to the Arab American community, certainly. And doing a great job there for everybody in Michigan, for the good of everybody. Okay, we're wrapping up now.
Jay, I just want to mention real quick, Knights of Columbus Fish Fry tonight, that Sacred Heart Grill Seal, and from 4 to 8. And tomorrow night, we have a chili cook-off happening at the Grill Seal Centennial Farm Activity Center. Come one, come all, from 6 to 8. And enjoy.
Grill Seal, another great place to visit.
Yes.
If not, live there.
Oh, yeah.
And don't forget, O'Kelly Banquets going on. That's the KFC here in Dearborn on Park Street. They're doing a fish fry, too, all the way through March 25th, starting at 11 a.m. each Friday to 8 p.m. at night. In both locations, you can get beer and